Welcome to the Careering into Motherhood podcast. I'm Jane Johnson, and this is the second in a series of two episodes about being a working mother during lockdown. I've spoken to employers about what they're doing and the aspects of lockdown life that they're considering keeping beyond lockdown if it means that employees are happier and more productive. And today I'm speaking to Bryony Cox, a single mother with a very busy job, about how she's managing to keep it all together and give her son all the love and care he needs. My second guest today is Caroline Stapleton, a teacher at an A-level college in Hampshire with two very young children. And my final guest is Sarah Garashian, a paediatric consultant at Great Ormond Street Hospital, who has two children herself, and her husband is in the front line as well in ICU at one of the large teaching hospitals in London. So let's start with Bryony. Bryony, thank you very much for making the time. I think you've juggled with your son is obviously not at school today with the school closures, and so you've very kindly made time to jump on this call with me. Could you talk to me a little bit about your setup at home and your work scenario and obviously family?
So I'm a single mother of one. My son's eight, almost nine now, and I've been a single mother in full-time work pretty much ever since he was born. So it's been a busy 8 years. So I work in public relations for a small public sector technology agency. The agency I'm working for at the moment, I'm very fortunate that we all have the benefit of a very flexible working environment. So the agency was actually set up by a group of agency workers who wanted to have more of the flexibility to be with their families, but also to manage their careers as well. So they brought together this agency, Mantis, and we're full of working mums, flexibly, people without children. So we're a nice group of mixed parents and non-parents, all sort of muddling along together. So it's been really nice, but busy.
Yes, I'm sure. And so what's your, in inverted commas, normal working pattern, because obviously your son's at school and then he comes home, so how do you normally juggle that?
Yeah, so I work full-time, and I have done because I have to. So I mean, if I could work part-time, I would, but unfortunately it's just not possible. So luckily I'm fortunate that he's now in school with wraparound care, so breakfast clubs, after school clubs, but I also work from home pretty much full-time. I might pop into the office every now and again outside of quarantine. But yeah, having that one day where I can pop into London is quite nice. But actually being at home sort of 4 days out of five allows me to take him into school every now and again, pick him up from after school club. I don't miss school assemblies. I don't miss sports day. It's fantastic that I'm able to, if I need to take an hour out, I just take that hour out. Unfortunately, it does mean that there are evenings I'm working, but on the whole, I do try and limit that because I think you will just burn yourself out if you continue to work at that speed, and I've probably learned that the hard way.
Really? Yeah. And so when they decided to close the schools, what went through your mind? I mean, you must have seen it coming, and did you start, you know, what kind of planning can you make for that?
I'm lucky in the fact that so I had family help just a couple of miles away, and actually so when I had Dylan, I was actually living in the West Country and moved back about 5-6 years ago because I just realized being on my own and trying to have a full-time career without any kind of family help was just impossible. So I did move back for that reason. So when the rumours started around the schools closing, I wasn't too concerned in the beginning because my parents help out an awful lot. If I have to go away for meetings or if I need early or late start, they're always around to sort of help and pick up slack. Now, I thought, obviously, with lockdown, I thought, that's fine. We can sort of share schoolwork between us. They can have him in the mornings and I'll do the afternoon slot and we'll sort of work it out that way. And no one will have too much pressure. So that worked out for about a day, and then we went into full lockdown after one day of that, and everything that I knew, everything, all my safety net, everything sort of just got pulled out from underneath me that evening when Boris Johnson came on the television. It was quite a moment actually to realise that for the first time in a long time I was going to be on my own again.
Yeah, and how? What coping mechanisms do you have for yourself at the moment?
I think it's the realise that, well, it's taken me quite a while to realise that I cannot do it all, and I think
yes.
to be very kind on myself.
Yes.
And that's definitely a work in progress. I think at the start you believe that, oh, I can sort of carry on and no one will really notice that I'm going to try and hide what's going on and just carry on, and I don't want this to impact my colleagues who don't, especially don't have children. As a mother or a parent trying to juggle work, I think my idea of a nightmare is my life impacting on my colleagues.
Yes.
So them having to pick up my slack.
Yeah.
And also, you know, my client, I never want my clients to feel that I'm not 100% there for them. And also my employer to feel like my head's not 100% in the game.
Yeah.
I think understanding that it's okay to admit that you can't be everything to everybody all the time, and be a little bit kinder to yourself.
Yes.
And say, well, I'll do what I can. You'll have to bear with me. I may not be the Bryony that was working 2 months ago, but I will do my best for you. And there's really not much more I can do apart from, you know, making sure I'm trying to get enough sleep, but also making sure I'm spending enough time with my son. That whole guilt thing that really I find very hard to cope with, and I'm sure that's something that we all feel.
Yes.
That horrible, oh, I'm not spending enough time with him, I'm not taking him out. It's trying not to feel too much guilt and making sure that I'm getting outside with him maybe at least once a day for a kickabout with a football if I can.
Absolutely. And I think the more people and parents that I'm talking to through this podcast, the theme is, and there was a lady I spoke to last week who said, I never wanted my daughter to be the reason, as in the reason that I had to leave early, or the reason I couldn't take up a particular project or couldn't travel or whatever. But then she said, you know, the realization of this, what's happening right now, was that it was really only her putting that additional pressure on herself. And I think, you know, we all seem to put this huge pressure on ourselves, but actually a lot of the employers, not all, but a lot of employers right now and colleagues are being hugely understanding and trying to help their employees and as much as they can. And if you're listening to this and you're not, then take note, because we can't be it all, as you say.
No, and it's interesting. So the morning after lockdown came into force, I had an email from my boss that actually had me in floods of tears, and I hadn't quite realised, I don't think I'd processed between the evening and the morning how much the position that I was in, I think my body had understood how difficult this was going to be, but my mind sort of hadn't got there. And I received an email from my boss before me, without me even having to ask. She did say, you know, it's time for us to support you as a family, and just saying that they needed me to be happy, healthy, and feeling like I could take on the world, and that they were 100% behind me. And I can't tell you why I can, because I cried for about 10 minutes.
So nice.
The absolute relief that I wasn't going to have to pretend to work normally while having this two extra jobs. You're doing a full-time role, you're now sort of homeschooling and doing childcare at the same time, and then running a house and doing the cooking and cleaning. It's on the table. It's more than one person can do. You can't physically do that.
I can tell you it's more than two people can do, because I live here, you know, with my husband, and we have one child as well. And, you know, even I feel overwhelmed with the amount of stuff we're trying to do. And as I say, we are two adults. So I know you said when we were, you know, sort of setting up this interview that, and I think you're right, that the single parent story hasn't really been talked about. And you're really, you know, obviously your employer, that's just fantastic that they can offer that level of support, especially when there are plenty who aren't. So Bryony, just how are you managing to juggle things, obviously with work and childcare, and it's all landing at your feet?
Yeah, well, I think it's impossible, no matter which way you look at it. And I think the only tip I can give is to be willing to ask for help. To look out to your wider circle. So I have my parents, I've managed to get them using Zoom, which for anyone who knows my parents is quite a big thing. But they're at sort of 10 o'clock every morning, they're taking over homeschooling for an hour to 2 hours.
Oh, that's good.
So I'm sending them emails very early in the morning with lists of tasks. And it allows me at least two, I know I've got 2 hours every single day where he's learning and I'm able to carry on with work.
Yeah.
But I've also got my sister-in-law up in Devon doing reading and spelling tests with my son as well.
Oh, really?
She's on maternity leave at the moment, so she's got a little bit of time to devote. But just sort of tapping, I think the thing is to tap into your network and and see what you have available to help, whether that's friends or family. I think everyone's more willing at the moment to step in and help, and I think the key is to take advantage of it and not feel guilty at all.
Yeah, definitely. I know we've started doing some of that kind of stuff with grandparents, and my son's far better behaved for them than he is for me, so everyone's winner. Is it too early to ask you whether you've had any sort of learning lessons yourself? I don't mean school lessons, I mean whether you've learned anything about your parenting style or your fortitude, your just mental fortitude of being able to cope with this.
So parenting style, I've learned that I have absolutely zero patience and I could absolutely never cut it as a teacher. I'm always the one that storms off first, but it's to forgive myself for doing that and sort of take a few deep breaths and go back to it. I'm not gonna say I don't struggle every single day with homeschooling. It's just not my natural ability. I find it incredibly difficult, but we're getting through and doing a bit every day. I think for the second part, it's hard to say really. I've been a single parent, as I said, for 8 to 9 years, and I learned an awful lot about myself and my own fortitude very early on when I had to cope unexpectedly on my own from when he was a baby. So I'm pretty aware that I have quite a lot of inner strength. I'm not meaning to sound...
you're not sounding anything. You do. But, you're awesome.
But I already knew I had the resilience. And it probably gave me a lot of confidence to think, well, you know, I've been through an awful lot of quite tricky situations personally. And I've managed to build and balance a career while doing that. So bring it on, is all I can say. I'm absolutely certain I will still be standing, probably with a few more white hairs than normal, but I'll still be standing. And you know, my son will come out of it okay. He's pretty resilient. So, and I think it's a good, you know, it's a good thing to, let's look at the positives. It's a good thing for him to see me, you know, carrying on my job and sort of working my way up the career ladder.
Yes.
But also supporting him running a household. And I don't think the inner feminist within me is quite proud of that. And I'm happy that he gets to see that every day.
I'm sure. No, that's fantastic. Can I ask you about whether you will, you're obviously going to be very, you're going to feel very loyal to Mantis.
Yes.
After this.
I think my loyalty to Mantis, it was always pretty strong because I've been supported for I think it's been 5.5 years with the current agency, and you know, there have been times I've needed support, not in the way I need it now, but I was pretty loyal before, but I have to say that their support and openness to back me 100%, it can't fail to make you more loyal.
Exactly.
For business, it definitely takes a lot of stress off me, knowing that no matter what happens in my life, they will be there to support me.
Yes, and enables, there's so much talk about being yourself at work because of the value that employers derive from having people who don't have to waste time on the politics or, you know, other kinds of stresses. You've got enough. Can I ask about your clients? It must have driven, working like this must have driven both from Mantis' side, from your employer's side, but also from your client's side, more creative ways of working. Because I'm guessing, you know, they're obviously, I'm assuming your clients aren't all sitting at a desk 9 to 5 like they used to be. Have there been any changes in kind of what you do, the work that you're doing and the way you do it?
It's really interesting, actually. Sort of having that window into other people's lives. I know a lot of people have been saying this. It's the greatest leveler, isn't it? It's seeing your client's children scuttling along behind them, mine's doing the same. And they're also stuck in their spare room or attic room, in an interesting choice of t-shirt. and it's a great conversation piece. But I think I haven't seen any more than everybody's willingness to talk more. Mm-hmm. So when we're having sort of weekly calls with clients, everybody just wants to talk a little bit more, and I think it's a really lovely thing. I am seeing a lot more working. We're getting emails at odd times.
But without the pressure to have to reply immediately, right?
I hope so. This is something that we've been talking about internally within our organisation, is the need to put boundaries in. So a lot of the working parents are clearly working sort of odd hours, early mornings, late evenings. And we've made it very clear within our organisation that no one is expected to respond out of hours. If you can write your email and schedule it to send the next morning, that is absolutely what you should be doing. Because I think we need to recognise as parents that we might be working until 10 o'clock at night because we took 4 hours out to, you know, take my son out to play football and do a bit of English. And I might have things I have to do, but there's no need for them to be responding to me at 10 o'clock at night or feel the pressure to do so. So I feel very conscious about the team that are not having the same experience that we are as working parents during lockdown. So I think that's important.
Yes, yeah.
From a client point of view, apart from the everyone's willingness to talk a bit more and emailing at odd times, I haven't seen a huge amount of change. I think everybody is very focused, and because our agency is, a lot of our clients are working in the public sector, so delivering technology straight into the NHS, into healthcare, and providing technology that's enabling patients to talk via video to their loved ones, and all sorts of fantastic tech that our clients are pushing into the NHS and social care at the moment. That actually, we're actually really, really busy, and our clients are really busy. But it's a nice busy, because actually our work is, we can see it's having an impact on what this crisis is and how it's affecting people. So it's really cool.
So my thanks to Bryony, who's given a very, very interesting perspective as a single mum, how she's coping. And obviously she's the only person, the buck stops with her at everything, the housework, the cooking, the schooling, and earning money to keep a roof over their heads. So a really interesting perspective, and one that, as she says, is not really being talked about too much during this crisis. My next guest is Caroline Stapleton. She is an A-level teacher, and we talked to her about how she's coping and what she's doing with her job and her career at the moment. So how on earth has your educational setting sort of dealt with this, and how did you prepare for it, and how's it working? I guess that's the three different parts of this interview. When you know, like we all did, we saw it coming, the potential closure of educational settings. What provisions were you able to make, if any, for yourself and then obviously for your students?
We were really lucky because our principal was very open all the way through and communicated right really from the start of March was when we knew something was coming, and we were kind of second guessing when we thought we would have to close college, because we've closed. And what we did was we basically spent 2 weeks setting up as much as we possibly could while we were still on site, training up the students as much as we could, training our staff as much as we could, so that we'd be able to conduct all of the lessons virtually. So we're running a full-time timetable. Students just attend as normal and they're registered as normal. The register kind of marks have changed because of, you know, some students don't have good Wi-Fi connection. Some staff don't have good Wi-Fi connection. We put in various virtual learning platforms, updated our software as well, so that we could support the students as best as we possibly could, and then just waited for the Department for Education to give us some guidance. So it was really surreal, I must say, really, really surreal, because as we were prepping, more and more students were going off, going into self-isolation. So by the end, I actually went into self-isolation because I was unwell 2 days before we shut college. And it was really quiet, really eerie. And the students were sort of, we all felt in limbo because we knew it was coming, and we just had to prepare as best we could.
Yes. And how has it felt? Because funnily enough, a couple of months ago, I interviewed a lady called Holly Power, who does a lot of work in the education sector to find flexible roles for women and people who want to go back into teaching. She, funnily enough, said, you know, I don't think we're at the point yet where we're ready to bring in the robots to do the teaching kind of thing or use all these platforms. But obviously, because of necessity, that has had to take place. How, I mean, you yourself have children, and am I right in...
You could probably hear them in the garden. Also... yeah, I've got two small boys.
So how are you doing that?
Oh,
how
my
are
goodness. You doing? I think the main thing that I've found, and colleagues with children have found the same, teaching colleagues with children, is that we're putting so much in place for other people's children that we're just so aware that we do not want it to be at the detriment of our own. So I have to say, I think my employer are really flexible. They were so flexible. I couldn't have gone into my previous role with children. I was a deputy head, and that was a huge role, and fair play to anyone who does it. But my employers are really, really flexible and very, very understanding. So basically what I've managed to do with the boys is I've shifted my working day. So I try and record a lot of things for my students. So I film lectures and record podcasts so that I'm sort of there in the lesson with them. But if I've got to jump out and look after the boys or do something, they've got work there that they're able to do. Which I suppose is really lucky because they are that much older, the students.
And how old are your children?
6 and 4. So one is in year one and the other is just about to start school in September.
And how, because I have a 5-year-old in year one and he, I can't just leave him to get on with anything for more than 2 minutes.
No, mine are the same. There's a lot of Lego. A lot of trains and quite a lot of screen time. I think that's where the guilt is, isn't it? When you think, oh, they're going in front of the screen again. But like I say, shifting the day seems to have worked for me. So I work a late night. I work before my college starts, getting everything prepped and uploaded onto our learning platforms. And then, yeah, sort of sit with the boys. But I would say we probably get an hour and a half of learning done a day.
Various
10-minute chunks. It really
yes,
and yeah. A lot of arguments.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? Someone said to me that you know, while we all stress about how much educational time these young kids are getting, actually teachers are very well equipped to help bring kids back up to standard. What they can't do is look after their mental health and well-being in that regard. So,
and really, we haven't even had a summer holidays off yet. Do you know what I mean? Because have we been on lockdown 5 weeks? We're just going into week 6. So actually, you know, they've only been out of school, out of formal education for a summer holiday, really. And over a summer holiday, they regress a little bit, but not a great deal. And like you say, yeah, teachers are so well equipped to bring them up to speed. And yeah, the mental health side of things, I don't know about your child, but they have struggled even being so young. It's such a change in their routine, in their day, and they miss their friends so much.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yes, we've had all of that. So am I right in thinking that your husband, your partner, is also in education?
Yes, yeah, he used to be a teacher and he left about 6 months ago to become an IT consultant. So
how are you juggling all of that?
We are juggling is probably the right word. It's sort of half an hour on, half an hour off, who's got meetings at various points during the day or lessons. Almost, I hate to use the phrase, but you know, where are the non-negotiables? Where do you have to be without any interruption? And then we can sort that.
And so what are you doing? Are you having a kind of powwow at the end of each day and planning one day ahead?
Absolutely. Yeah. What's your meeting? What's your day looking like tomorrow? Where are you at? When can you... Oh, I've got this and I need to be here at, you know, in front of the screen at this point. Fortunately, we've both got our own laptops. You know, we're not sharing computer screens, which, gosh, I can imagine some people probably are. And some students are sharing with the rest of the family or doing it from their phones as well.
That's a really interesting point. So when you're preparing your lessons or delivering your lessons. I love the idea that you've moved some of your content onto podcasting. That's amazing. But you're, I guess you're having to be conscious all the time that, you know, I'm from a corporate world where you just assume everyone's kind of sitting behind a laptop or has a laptop. But in your sector, there are no, you can't make any assumptions.
No, absolutely. And we're quite, we've got quite a few rural students and quite a few rural staff. So again, Wi-Fi isn't great. The network isn't great. Same with me here, actually. I'm in a village and it's, sometimes it dips in and out. But again, you know, the college has thought of that and we're sending paper-based activities out. Everything that we're putting online, you know, there is a paper form that can be sent out for the students. It's very weird not seeing them, but what I really like is we do everything through Microsoft Teams currently, and we sort of have a chat room when you say hello and all these hi's keep pinging up as you sort of register your class. That's really nice. And I think they like the routine as well. I think quite a few of my second years are finishing at the end of May, but we're going to carry on. And I'm going to do some, you know, what do you want to learn about? You've been ensconced in A-levels for so long, but what would you like to do as a bit of fun? So quite staying on with me and we'll just do some extra bits and pieces.
And what is, so because I have a child much younger, but what is the at the moment with regards to A-levels? Mm. Are they going ahead?
Or they're going to be teacher assessed. So, I mean, for some students, that's going to work brilliantly for them, especially if they have exam anxiety. But obviously, you know, we assess throughout their 2 years at college. So we've got a sort of background of what the students are like, what their progress has been like over the last 2 years, where we expect them to be.
Yes, of course. And it might sound like a crazy question, but are there any aspects of this way of working that you would want to continue with?
I think I will try and keep like the podcasting lecture style of things. I'm going to keep them and reuse them in the coming years because they're all done now. And it means that, you know, you can set them for homework and then have more discussion time in class. The face-to-face, the students like the face-to-face when we've done like little straw polls with them across the different departments. They do prefer the face-to-face and it's so easy to assess them when you're just looking at what they're doing and you know, giving them little pointers and helping in that way.
And of course it's so important for them to be, you know, as kids to be together in a classroom and playground and everything.
Definitely, and to support one another as well.
Yes. But, and have you and your husband, have you kind of forged any new ways of working? Again, I'm not suggesting the nightly powwow about how you handle the next day, but have there been any positives to come out of this situation, I guess?
That's a really tough one. We're quite flexible people as it goes, so we kind of just try and take everything in our stride. It's probably more the not learning side and the not working side and what we've tried to do with keeping fit and keeping healthy. I don't know if that really answers your question properly, but sort of we've made more time for ourselves as individuals to go out and do the exercise and get a bit of headspace away from the house.
And did he have any flexibility at all before? Did he have days he could work from home or anything?
Yes. Yeah. So he's based at home anyway.
Right. Ah, okay.
And what he would do.
Obviously not with two children.
No. But he would work from home and then travel to various meetings and for his job. So I guess he was kind of set up anyway to work from home.
But, yes, and obviously used to being around for the kids and helping out and, you know, there for bedtimes and things.
Oh yes, he's always been there, to do that kind of thing and take them to school because obviously I start at 9, so he would do all the drop-offs and I'd do all the pickups mainly.
That's great. Well, thank you very much indeed, Caroline. It's I'm really, really interested. I always have this thing when I interview people from sectors which I, you know, don't know anything about. It's always really interesting. And especially, I think the one theme that is coming through everyone that we're talking to at the moment is around this sudden enforced need to be really creative about how we remain productive.
Yes, definitely. I think the creativity side of things is the one that I'm trying to tap into because I think just PowerPoint after PowerPoint must be dull for the students.
Definitely.
Things for them to do. Yeah, it's definitely tapped into our creative side and our digital literacy side as well. I think I'm definitely improving on that front.
My thanks there to Caroline, who's obviously in an industry that has had to completely change the way that it works, from teaching face-to-face to doing things online and finding new technologies. My next guest is Sarah Garashian. She is a paediatric consultant at Great Ormond Street Hospital, and she has two boys, and she's also married to somebody who also works very much in the front line with the NHS. I talked to her about how she's coping at the moment and what they're doing from a family perspective. So, Sarah, thank you very much for making the time. Could you just talk to me a bit about your job and what you're doing, how you're doing it at the moment?
Sure. So I'm a consultant paediatric haematologist at Great Ormond Street Hospital. And since the sort of restrictions have come into play, we've been encouraged to work from home as much as possible. So in the normal course of a week, so I'm a full time, and in the normal course of a week, there are usually 2 to 3 days where I have to go into the hospital to see patients and to do work that I couldn't manage from home or is easier to do at work. And then the rest of the time, then I'm at home, working from home in a sort of, we've got a sort of area upstairs in our house that we've sort of changed into a home office. So it's a shared space for my husband and my children, but we have it as a workspace. So that works for us.
I was going to say, when you're doing the work from home, I mean, have you been able to transition? Are you able to do any consultations from home or anything like that?
Yeah, so you can do video calls to patients, and that's just been set up and enabled through work. I haven't tried that yet. And I think to some extent, I'm a bit worried that people might assume that you can see as well as you can if you're face to face. So I've kind of kept it as telephone consultations or actual face to face, because I'm just a bit worried about missing things that I wouldn't miss if I'd actually been there with my hands on a patient. So I've mainly done telephone consultations, and I have done a few of them from home. But, you know, as you can imagine, it's hard to kind of eliminate all background noise. And for me, my sort of professional persona is quite important, I think, in terms of, you know, we're often treating patients who come to us as opposed to other centres in the whole of the UK. So I feel like I can't really have lots of background noise and me telling my children off halfway through phone calls. So yeah, so I try and bunch all my clinical work together and then go in for 2 days or 3 days and bash it all out then, and then do everything else I can do offline at home. And I can do a lot of meetings from home. That's fine. I don't mind there being background. Everyone is in the same boat. So from that perspective, I don't mind there being background noise when I'm talking to my colleagues in the context of a meeting.
And then you've got the added, I don't want to say complication, but challenge, that your husband is obviously also in a frontline, very much frontline. How have you juggled that? And are you happy to talk about what he does?
Yeah, so my husband's a ITU consultant at a teaching hospital in London. So it has been very busy, and his working practice has changed huge. I mean, I think the whole of the NHS is reconfigured, or most frontline services have reconfigured what they do in light of COVID-19, regardless of what the instance has been of cases coming through the door. But I think for him in particular, their day-to-day work changed a lot, and their workload changed a lot. So they did a lot of changing of rotas and things, which was always a pain for us, because we tend to get a rota a year in advance, and then we work really quickly to swap anything out that might be conflicting, and then the year then just runs quite smoothly. But this year, of course, we did everything for the start of the year, got our rotas in line, and then by March everything changed. So I was lucky in that I was just finishing off quite a long run of on call, which then meant I had a bit of a break in terms of being frontline in the hospital for long days. So that gave us an extra buffer, but I'm about to start being on call again, and I will need to coordinate my on call shift with his to make sure that we're not both on call at the same time, because then there's no one to look after the children. And it generally works okay, apart from there have been a few tense moments when we're both meant to be on calls at the same time and we haven't properly coordinated our diaries.
But and you obviously you have two boys who are of school age. How on earth are you coping or managing with that and doing homeschooling? I think you said that you right at the start of the crisis you moved your parents came to live with you. Have they sort of been helping obviously with the childcare? I'm assuming that's why.
Yeah, so we had a week where my husband and I were both on call, and this was just before lockdown happened, but we knew it was coming, so we contacted my parents, who were planned to come over for that week in any case, and I explained to them that if they came then they would most likely get stuck here in the UK. They live in France normally. Yeah, so we sort of discussed that coming to London was probably a risk for them, because the incidence would be higher in London than where they live in France. They live in rural France. But they had already committed to come and help us with that week. And otherwise it would have been, you know, there was relatively little notice of all these different things happening. So it would have been difficult for us to manage without them, but we gave them the option and were fairly open about the fact that we would be putting them at risk by bringing them over to carry on with their committed week, and that they would then end up getting stuck here, which is what happened. And I think they were quite happy to do that, and I think they didn't want to be far away from us when there were so many changes going on in any case. And they're sort of actively, they come and they help every holiday, so every school holiday, they normally are involved with looking after our children. So I think they felt it was something that they wanted to do, and they were happy to come over. So they came over for their allocated week, and they did end up staying for a lot longer. So they've been subsequently helping out, and as a result, we haven't had to rely on the key worker provision at school. We have kept our boys at home, which I think is good, because overall it's meant that, you know, they've been at home and in their own environment. It would have been strange for them to be at school. I think they've only been about 20 kids at school sort of pursuing the key worker allocation, so I think it's more of a homework club at school, and it's, you know, relatively limited activities. I think they would have really struggled perhaps. So we were lucky enough to have that extra provision of care, but we are now talking about, obviously, when the borders open up and travel is a bit freer, and then we will ask my mum and dad if they want to go back, and I think they're planning to go back at that point. So probably in the next few weeks I'll be making a move back to France, and we will then take out the key worker provision and ask for full-time schooling.
Yes, my God. And can you, do you and your husband, do you see any, I mean, I imagine with both of you in the careers that you're in, there is never any kind of easy life, but can you see any light on the horizon? Can you see any, in inverted commas, return to normality? Or do you just plan day to day, week to week? I don't know how it, I can't imagine how it must work.
Well, so we were due to go on holiday in Easter, and that all leave got put on hold, so there was no leave, and anyway, we couldn't go anywhere, so that was fine. And I think we, most people are kind of operating having not had any leave as such, but I think the bank holidays have helped, and we haven't had to work on bank holidays apart from rostered days, which then, you know, you have rest days afterwards. So that's worked out okay. But I think as time goes on, we need to plan leave, and then the schedules will change. So my schedule's fixed, but and my husband's will change, I think, as the number of cases goes up or down. And then at the same time, the NHS needs to convert back to being an NHS that can serve and do all the other functions that it was doing, and that's all being planned at the moment. So hospital activity, whilst there are ongoing cases with COVID-19 and a return to normal service provision, will be busier overall. For us in the paediatric setting, the number of cases that have been relatively few, but we've had to completely reconfigure the way that we do things to make sure that patients are equally catered for, whether or not they're COVID-19 or suspected COVID-19 or et cetera. And this has meant that we've had to reorganise a lot. So although the cases haven't been significant, the reorganisation has been significant. And then the challenges of working at home and working sort of remotely have been, you know, a new way of working for all of us. So I think it's been challenging in lots of different ways, but I think probably the number of hours that we work is reasonably similar. I just don't commute in and out of work on the days I don't need to.
Is it any more emotionally stressful, or your day-to-day stress levels are so much higher than someone like me in my career? You know, how do you cope with everything that's going on?
I think life has got much simpler. So, you know, we used to run around loads at the weekends and take our children to numerous activities. A lot of that's now done online or virtually, and that's helped because we're not just crazy at the weekend. So in a way, it feels like life has slowed down, and we've benefited from that break, even though we haven't had a lot of leave and we haven't been totally switching off. And then the clinical work has been reasonably intense, and there's been a lot of additional hours reorganising and contributing to the reorganisation of services. So in a way, it's been a balance. I mean, I'm acutely aware that probably would have been different if I was an adult doctor dealing with a sort of caseload that was increasing. And that hasn't been the case because I'm a paediatrician in a very specialist area in a specialist hospital. So I think those things are sort of balanced out. And I think also, you know, at times like these, you have to be more sanguine about life. And so in a way, that's also helped me balance things out and give you a sort of a platform to just be more practical and just accept that there's only so much you can do. And I think that's actually been quite beneficial, and as a perspective that I hope we can kind of keep hold of as we move forward and as activity goes back to normal and we're all faced with challenges of what we do. And I think the biggest challenge is going to be getting in and out of work without using public transport. I mean, for the sake of my patients, when I was frontline for a month just at the beginning of the lockdown, I had already started cycling into work because it was clearly the biggest risk that I would pick up something on the tube on the way in and pass that on to my patients who are immunocompromised. So I started cycling every day rather than just sporadically, and that was something that I've stuck with. So I'm a lot fitter, but it comes with its own challenges because you're much more tired, but at the same time it's also a bit of headspace which helps you unwind at the end of a busy day. So actually, again, it's come with multiple advantages and disadvantages. So I think that would be one of the challenges, is if we're going into work now every single day, then trying to do that without relying on public transport is difficult.
Yes, certainly. I mean, I was hearing things about Uber and things that they were going to put their drivers, you know, at disposal of NHS workers and things like that. Not happening.
I think they had 100,000 trips at the beginning of the lockdown that they put out there, and I think it went in about 2 days. So, you know, there was just the numbers of people involved are so huge. And as I say, I mean, I've built up my fitness, and that's hopefully that will help. But, you know, that's just an additional hurdle to overcome. It's now cycling to half an hour to work and back up a massive hill.
Oh, we have to get an electronic scooter or something.
I think I need a better bike if this is going to carry on long term. And I think that's one of the things, is that, you know, I think we have to be realistic that until there is an active vaccination that really takes away the risk, there will be ongoing mini outbreaks for several months.
But you do see, you're talking several months rather than several years, or?
I mean, normal vaccine development is sort of 3 to 5 years. So if they accelerate that and then they're able to sort of harness the logistics required to roll out an effective vaccine, and the early data seems promising, but it's super very early, then maybe we'll be out of this in a year or two. But as I say, normal vaccine, sometimes you don't find a good vaccine at all. So there are many infectious diseases that we haven't had ability to vaccinate against, and there are ongoing health problems, but hopefully this isn't going to be one of them. The early data looks encouraging, at least in non-human primates, so fingers crossed.
I was really quite emotional talking to Sarah just then. I think where I would just feel totally out of control, she's able to calmly reflect and see silver linings, but I guess that's why she has the job that she does. I hope you've enjoyed this short series, just the stories of resilience and positivity and an overwhelming sense of making it work regardless of how out of the normal this feels. Of course, we're all in our own totally unique situations, but I hope that we can take some comfort from knowing that we're all also very much in the same boat and all doing our utmost to support our families and each other. And also, I hope we all feel supported ourselves. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and a rating. You can find Careering Into Motherhood over on Facebook. There's a group where 6,500 women are there for each other every day, asking for advice and supporting each other, especially at the moment. And our next coaching program launches on the 3rd of June. It's a bespoke program for working mothers, and especially helps anyone looking to change direction, pivot their career, or just find a new sense of meaning in what they do at work. For more details, please email me at jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. I also love to get your feedback and ideas for future podcasts, so please do drop me a line. Thank you.